Welcome back to Hype Podcast. This is Hypeable.com's flagship show, where we bring you all the latest news in entertainment and pop culture every week. My name is Pamela, and I'll be your host today for our Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them special. Massive, massive spoiler warning. This probably goes it should go unsaid, but if you have not seen the movie yet, please do not hit play. Stop, do not pass go, do not collect $200, because we're going to be diving deep into this movie, you guys. We've all seen it now, we're so excited, but if you're trying to avoid spoilers until you get out to the theater, whatever, come back and listen to us when you have done so. We've got, you know, pretty, like, nice, well-rounded panel here today. I'm here with Selena, who, of course, does our show on the regular with us. How's it going, Selena?
Pretty good, yeah.
Awesome. And then we have our friend Michal, who's back. She was on our SDCC special. We've had her on a bunch of times before. So I'm really excited to have you back, Michal. How are you doing?
I'm good. Happy to be here.
Yeah, you actually saw, well, I wanted to get started by I want to hear about, like, the vibe of when you guys saw the movie and stuff like that, because you actually saw it at the J.K. Rowling event, right, in New York City?
Yeah, I did.
Is that right? So, how's that?
I mean, it was amazing. She's, like, I feel like it's become kind of cool to, like, criticize J.K. Rowling and, like, talk about, like, various, you know, things that she's not doing quite as well as she could. But, like, hearing her talk about Lumos and the incredible passion that she brings to just, like, caring for other people is, I mean, it sets you in an entirely different mindset. Like, you want to go out and change the world, you know, like, as if we didn't want to do that already, given certain political events. But, you know, so it was amazing. She and Eddie Redmayne have hilarious chemistry. They spoke really well together. And the one downside of it was that my seat was, like, way up in the nosebleed. So I was kind of looking down at the screen from the height of about a house and, like, far away. And the audio wasn't, like, the best. So I had to go see it again last night. But the atmosphere in the crowd was amazing. Like, every time there was something recognizable, like, everybody just, like, screamed with laughter. You know, the opening credits, obviously, people went crazy. The revelation at the end was just amazing. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, so you've seen it twice now. Still good? Does it still hold up? Like, do you still like it? Or
yeah, I liked it better the second time, actually, which I thought I might, because it was sort of hard to get a grasp of a lot of the finer details from way up in the nosebleeds. But seeing it in a normal theater, I mean, I still think the movie has issues, and we'll talk about those, but it has a lot of heart, and the acting is wonderful, and there is a magic to it that I think is really very, very special and very kind of organic. Even though it's this, you know, huge Hollywood franchise, it still feels very joyful.
And what did you think, Selena? You saw it in Denmark.
I did. So it's a totally different movie, special for a Danish audience.
Yes, of course. They completely changed, like, everything. There was, completely different beasts, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. Well, actually, Nicholson as the villain this time, that moved things a lot.
I actually do have a question about that. In the opening, when you're going through all the newspapers and stuff, when I saw it at Carnegie Hall, there was one frame of, like, you know, Wizards Baffled, is football the new Quidditch? Or, like, some joke.
Yeah, that was soccer in this one.
But that frame wasn't there at all when I saw it last night.
Really? That's weird. That was definitely there in my screening.
Yeah, I know. It was so weird.
I would have to go back and watch it again. I saw it twice before we recorded this special, and the only thing that, like, the things that popped out to me were kind of references that were made later in the movie, like the giggle water advertisements and things like that. So I think I might have missed that, if that was even in my showing at all.
But I mean, as for my experience of it, just to give a brief introduction of my opinion, I guess, and I'm really sad that I haven't seen it a second time, because I feel like I totally agree, first of all, with the magic of it all, and that's actually one of the things that I was so happy about and so pleasantly surprised by. Like, when people said I saw some reactions being like, the beasts is the best thing about this film. And my reaction to that was like, oh, it must be a really crappy film if that's the case. But it actually was the best thing because the beasts were so amazing. And all the magic that I have felt was lacking from the previous Harry Potter films, I felt like they captured that in this. And also because it wasn't based on a book that I loved, I didn't come into it with, how are they going to mess this up? So in that sense, I had an amazing time, but I would love to see it one more time because it might help clarify how I really feel about the story and the way the characters were presented. Because and this discussion will be super interesting as well to help clarify that, because I'm really torn on that. And even when I'm thinking about seeing it again, I'm like, I wonder if I would like it less under closer scrutiny, but I might end up liking it more. So I mean, I'll have to sort of check back in with hype when I've seen it a second time, because it might change. But I do have some, definitely, I don't even want to say mixed opinions, because I genuinely did like it, but when we get into the discussion, there might be like some elements that we can dive a little bit more into. But overall impression, I thought it was magical. I thought it was beautiful. I think Newt is a spectacular new main character, and I love him. And yeah, I thought it was a great time back in the wizarding world, basically.
Also, yeah, guys, I think Nifflers.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, well,
let's talk more. But anyway, we'll do the book.
Let's get into it. Do you guys want to start with the beasts? Were there enough fantastic beasts for you guys? I know that was a big topic of concern.
Oh my god, I love the beast. Like, every sequence within the magical suitcase was my favorite. I just thought it was a spectacular invention, and the design, like the moon calves, I think those were my favorite, actually.
They were so cute. They're like little alpacas.
They were so cute. Oh, looking really at the cute moon.
You know what? You're right. I was so impressed by that, because I think that, like, we knew that he kept them there, but I just thought it was going to be like a shelf system.
Yeah.
It is kind of brilliant that, like, we Pokemon actually got, like, we got like two different worlds. Mm-hmm. Like, we got the world in the suitcase, and that's like really like Newt's world, because we can kind of tell he's a little like, he's like too quirky for humanity almost. Like, doesn't have very many friends, which made me so sad. Like, I wanted to be his friend.
I just wanted to live in that suitcase.
That too. And then you have like the American Wizarding World, which was like such a great contrast, because it's like, it's almost like a safe space, that suitcase, in comparison to everything else that's going on.
Yeah, for me, it was definitely like the combination of Newt and the beasts. I think if the beasts had been used, and the movie maybe lost my attention a teeny bit when it veered into like exclusive focus on the beasts. But like in that scene, especially like the first time in the suitcase, when you are seeing Newt in his element, and you know, that line he has about how like the beasts outside are surrounded by the most dangerous creatures on earth, and that's humans. And I thought they played off of each other. Even the scene where he's, you know, trying to seduce that beast, like, it's hilarious, but it's also really indicative of the fact that like he cares more about their well-being and is really willing to do anything for these creatures, and he has a kinship with them that he doesn't have with humanity. And I really loved that. I mean, I wasn't expecting him to be such an outsider, and I loved that he was.
I did too. That mating scene was actually the scene that won me over in the movie in general, because I was like not really totally sure what to make of it at the first part. Like, I liked it, but I was like, I don't really know. And then that scene, and he just kept going, and he just kept dancing and kept being ridiculous, and I was like, okay, I'm into it.
What I want to know is, I haven't read, of course, the J.K. Rowling and Warner Brothers released the original screenplay for the film the same day that the movie came out, so that's out in bookstores now. If you guys have picked it up, we'd love to hear what you thought, if you've gotten through it again. But I would like to know how much direction she gave for that, and how much was Eddie. So I hope that's in the bonus content when they eventually bring the DVD out, because I think that would be really fun to know. So let's talk a little bit more about Newt. I guess, like, we've decided that we were very, like, endeared by his presence. What were some of our other favorite things about him, specifically, like, you know, coming into to this new kind of realm of the magical world that we kind of know?
It appeals to me in a sad way that he has really written off humanity. You know, he does not expect to find kinship with other people. I mean, he mentions that to Jacob, that, like, people find him annoying. And probably Leta Lestrange is involved in that somehow. Like, I feel like something that hurt him happened there, along with the expulsion from Hogwarts. And I think, you know, Jo was saying, as she introduced the movie, she's like, I love all of these characters, and I know things about them that I need you guys to know. And I felt like it wasn't successful with all of the characters. I think there was a lot of one of my main criticisms of the movie. Well, first of all, there's not enough dialogue in the movie. There's, like, scenes where they will just be like walking, and it's like, Joe, screenwrite, you have to do this. And then I also think that there is a lot of interiority that she has in mind that might be in that script that is not necessarily on the screen, you know, and I could feel the parts where she was writing these beautiful, like explorations of the characters and funny observations about the world and stuff that just doesn't work because it's a movie, you know, and you have to go with what you see. And I think, to me, it felt clear that she was a first-time screenwriter on the project. But at the same time, I still, especially watching it again, I think there is a level of presentness to the characters that I hadn't seen from way up in the balcony. So I'm more comfortable with it than I had been.
That's really funny you mentioned that, because I think the only character to me that fell a little flat, but also I'm gonna forgive because I feel like a lot of these characters we're gonna have to start peeling back layers from. That's very, like, it's a very Joe thing, isn't it? To, like, make us wait and peel back the layers slowly. But I feel like Tina, and maybe just in contrast to Queenie, who is more emotionally present all the time, like, I think hers was the only character I wanted more from.
See, I actually, like, really, like, disagree with that, but we'll get into that when we talk about the two of them. But one thing that I actually thought, when you say, Michala, it was the screenwriting, I actually, and again, this will probably help when we read the book, we need to do a second one for the script, but is that I felt that was more on David Yates, honestly, because it all, like, first of all, I'm not a huge fan of the way that David Yates takes on this universe. Like, I was, again, super impressed with the visuals of the story in a way that I haven't been with previous Harry Potter films. But I think when it comes to bringing Joe's characters to life, I think there is evidence of him simplifying characters. Ron, anyone, Ginny, you know, I mean, simplifying characters for the screen in a way that movie fans will have a very different opinion of them than book fans, because all of the nuance is in the book. So I'm also wondering, when you're translating, when you don't have a book to work off and you're just doing a movie, I think it becomes much more evident that the depictions of the characters becomes very flat. And this was actually a point I had for Tina, but it also applies to Newt, in that character depth basically came down to them crying. Like, when they were supposed to show an emotion, they just welled up with tears. And this was true for both Tina and Newt all the time in the movie. And it was pretty weird because you didn't have the emotional history or backstory or depth.
I don't know, I could watch Newt cry all day.
But yeah, and that's like fine. And I liked, you know, because I was going to say, like, in the books, Hermione is crying all the time, and I take a little bit of issue with that, actually. So I'm happy that it wasn't just the female protagonist that was crying in this. But I did feel like when you look away from, yes, it's great that they give their male protagonist some emotion like that, and I do genuinely think that's great. Like, I was happy to see him be very, very visually emotional. But I do also think that when you have a script, or when you have a movie where you're way of showing depth, and this is a gross exaggeration, and I don't mean this is literally the only thing they did in the movie, but when your way of showing emotion is to make your characters cry, I think that there is something lacking. And I don't necessarily think that comes from the script. I think that comes from the direction. But of course, that's just speculation. It could also come from the editing because they cut out all the dialogue.
It's true. I mean, I did feel like there was, I mean, on the direction front, like I, you know, not having seen the Harry Potter movies, I actually felt like I was at a slight disadvantage because there was a, I saw the first one was like, not my Potter.
Wow.
And
you're so pure.
I know, I really am.
I can't believe that's crazy. I didn't know this about you. This is insane.
That's amazing. That's actually really interesting because, yeah, I mean, when you come into this with knowing the direction style of David Yates and seeing how he's improved, but also some of the kind of bad habits that he's taken with him, including the choppy editing and the shallow character setup, like, I think that's very interesting that you come into that totally fresh.
Yeah, so do people mutter in the other, like, Potter movies? Because, like, I felt like Newt and Tina especially, but even, I mean, all of them, they spoke in a very low register, and a lot of the time it was difficult to actually hear a lot of the lines, and I thought that was just the audio in Carnegie Hall, and I had similar difficulties. Like, Grindelwald's line at the end, I mean, like, still barely sure what he said.
I had to go look it up, actually. I had to go look it up because you're right. Well, the thing is, too, is like that line in particular was so out of nowhere. Like, it was kind of like meant to be a riddle that I thought I had heard one thing and I was like, and then the people I went with heard something completely different and they were like, neither of these make sense. So then I went to look it up and I was like, no, I was right. So it was just a weird line. But in general, I think you're right. Like, there are, like, some moments where, like, they spoke so softly, or they were, I guess, maybe, like the direction was to sound this way or that way. But it didn't, it almost, like, was harder to understand what was going on because you missed that one thing. And you're kind of a little focused on, like, was that important or was that not?
Well, because there is relatively little dialogue in the movie, I felt like every time they spoke and I couldn't hear them, it was like, I missed something important, you know?
Yeah, well, I had subtitles, so whenever I could hear it, I just turned to that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, there were subtitles.
Oh, yeah, Danish subtitles. Like, okay, that makes sense.
By the way, like, side note, don't ever go see a 3D movie with subtitles because the effect is totally ruined and you're just, like, completely, like, cross-eyed by the end of it.
Well, aside from that, I mean, like, just very quickly on a technical aspect, do you feel like 3D was worth it for Fantastic Beasts? There's always that argument about whether or not it's worth the extra money.
No, I will say no. And the reason that I sort of am, like, I feel like 3D adds, very rarely adds anything to the experience of going to a movie, to be honest with you, because your brain supplies the 3D itself. And it's only in movies like Jungle Book, where the entire world is brought to life by 3D, that I feel like it worked. But in this, I kind of did have the sense that most of the stuff was happening within the screen, and every once in a while you'd have a beast flying out at you. But to me, that was just, like, a little bit, I didn't love that. I didn't think it was necessary.
So the other thing I want to get to before we move on from Newt is Leta Lestrange, which was, like, one of the bigger curveballs. I don't think anybody really assumed that we were going to
see never such gonna a get rid of family, this family represented.
I know. So it was also interesting because when Zoe Kravitz got cast right at the end, we were kind of like, well, we really hope that she's got, like, a meatier role, because first of all, she would be wasted on, like, just being a jazz singer or somebody that was kind of added at the last minute. But it kind of sounds like she's going to get that. So let's talk a little bit about that and maybe theorize a little bit about how we're going to see her come into play as the series progresses.
Mm-hmm. Very excited.
Yeah. Nobody, like, expected that one, right? Everybody was like, oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. And I was like, again, a little bit like, Joe's obsession with the Lestrange family, I will never understand. But that aside, like, it's interesting that we're getting another branch of it. And I actually think, I'm not sure whether to be worried or intrigued by the fact that, like, she didn't appear in the family, the Black family tree or the Lestrange family tree.
Well, she's not we don't really have a Lestrange family tree, do we?
I guess not.
Like, we have the only Lestrange that's on the Black family tree is Rodolphus, but he's married to a Black.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there was something, like, she's not really a part of existing Harry Potter canon, so that kind of leaves her fate completely up to, you know, whatever Joe comes up with for this movie. I do think it's an interesting addition to add, also because it makes you wonder, like, obviously Newt was a Hufflepuff, so was this a Hufflepuff Lestrange, or did he have a friendship with a Slytherin? Like, what happened there? Like, all these things are, like, super intriguing. And I do love Zoe Kravitz, so I'm happy. I'm sad she wasn't in this movie, but I'm happy that she's being set up as such a potentially huge part of the story.
Yeah, I think about, I don't know, two-thirds of the way through the movie, I was like, wait a second, wasn't Zoe Kravitz in this movie? And then so when she showed up in the picture, I was like, oh, okay, so that's what they're doing with that. I do have to say, I also kind of assumed that she might have been an unhappy Hufflepuff, and which is exactly the plot of Puffs. So I don't know. You know, like, the whole thing's that there's this girl who thinks she should be in Slytherin, and she's a Hufflepuff. No. So I'm not sure. What interests me is that she seems right off the bat to be cast in a negative light. You know, like, she's not good for Newt. Like, Tina is good for Newt. Obviously, we know they end up getting married. So I'm interested to see how. I hope she gets to be a fully fleshed character, you know, and not just, like, this old love interest from Newt's past.
Yeah, it is interesting that Queenie calls her a taker, but at the same time, maybe, like, Newt is just, sometimes when you have people like that, that just require more, like, emotional support or what, any kind of support, and you already have somebody who's a giver, like, Newt is clearly, like, he cares for his creature, so therefore he would care for people he cares about. Like, it's easy to fall into that. So I almost kind of wonder, like, how misleading that line is. Like, maybe they're just not compatible for each other because she takes so much and he gives so much, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I was also like, I'm not sure how you know this, Queenie. Like, just from picking Newt's brain.
Well,
like,
yeah. Yeah, I guess she just, like, she got, like, a road trip down memory lane of all of Newt's, like, fondest memories or something. But
yeah.
But yeah, like, you guys, definitely excited to see how she's going to fit into everything else. And it was really cool to kind of get a tip of the hat to one of these infamous families that we're so familiar with because of the Potter movies. Mm. So
yeah. And I just hope she's not going to be like the Morgana of this story, you know? Like, I hope she's just going to be like
the evil smirks around the corner
girl who ends up being evil, you know? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but she's got to be on. She's got to be involved with Grindelwald, doesn't she?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're kind of thinking. I just hope they surprise us, you know, because it seems very obvious.
Right, right. It could also just be that, like she's torn between, like, you know, like, a very much like a serious situation where she's torn between what her family wants and what she knows is right, and then ends
up, that's what I'm hoping. Like,
bending
whoever
to the will of her family.
Mother was, that was a little strange too, right?
No, I think she was a
black. Andromeda.
Yeah.
They're
all
blacks. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever. Like, anyway,
Bellatrix
that's...
is black.
You know, the people who raise Teddy after Tonks and Lupin throw their lives away at the Battle of Hogwarts. I don't have bitter feelings. I'm fine. But I will say something that seemed interesting to me is that I read Book 7 twice in 2007 and haven't read it since.
Same.
because pain. So for me, I'd forgotten a lot of the stuff that we had learned about Grindelwald, and it was very fascinating for me to see how, like, evil but also genuinely, like his self-perception is altruism. Like, he believes he's doing the right thing. Absolutely. And I feel like that was something that we didn't get with Voldemort. And it was so I feel like there is room for people to be, you know, if they portray Leeta as a follower of Grindelwald, I think there is room for there to be some kind of, like, middle ground between evil and, because, you know, we don't like anybody, you know, except unless you were, like, forced into it, like Draco in Book 6. We don't have any sympathy for people who are following Voldemort. But in this case, I do feel like there is that idea of people who have been downtrodden and forgotten and misused and are at the edges of wizarding society that can find an empowerment in Grindelwald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so much relevance to today.
I know.
God. It's almost too much. Damn it, Joe, you did it again.
I know. And I love the idea that she wrote this, like, 2 years ago, and then she has...
Oh, but she saw it. She's, like, very observant, so I wouldn't be surprised if she injected this because she knew. Although these are also themes that have been repeated again and again in history because we just can't learn our lessons as humans.
But you know what was also really interesting to me? Like, hearing her talk about Lumos and talk about why children are institutionalized and the fact that, like, children are basically stolen from their families because their parents think that that's the only way they'll get fed, and then, you know, the people know that they'll get money for taking these children. And then watching Fantastic Beasts right after that, I was like, whoa, holy crap, this is the story of Lumos.
Yeah, this was very political in that sense with the Mary Lou and her, you know, followers.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the Second Salemers and Credence and stuff like that? That's probably like a nice little tie-in. Let's jump over there. So what do we think about this? I think I don't know why I said her name was Susan in the dog. I think it's because her name was like, her last name started with like Bone something. Susan Bones. Yeah. Like this happens to me all the time. But I mean, yeah, let's talk about like her, because she was kind of like a villain, but in a different way.
I mean, this, honestly, this, and it's interesting, so interesting that you brought up the Lumos thing, because watching this, and again, this is one of the things that I would like to see how I feel about it the second time, because this was for me, the worst part of the movie. I feel like this particular plot was really strangely handled. Like, I feel like they did a lot to try to set up Modesty as the false lead, or the MacGuffin, whereas it was actually obviously Credence that had the suppressed magic. But I kind of feel like we kind of knew that going in. Like, I don't know if they just promoted it badly or if his demeanor was just so obvious, but I felt like, I was like, oh, maybe they both have magic. And that was like the only thing that it could have been. So in that sense, I feel like they spent a lot of time trying to set up this reveal that didn't really work for me, because I didn't really feel like it was that much of a reveal. And I think Mary Lou, like, I saw what they were going for with it, but I just think they spent too much time on too little, especially considering what happens to Credence at the end. And of course, as we talked about before we started the show, there's some speculation as to whether this truly is the end of Credence. But if it really was just a way to introduce these obscurials to the world of Harry Potter and to set up this whole Grindelwald reveal, I feel like it was too much of the movie focused on this one thing.
Interesting.
But again, as a metaphor for Lumos, suddenly it makes a lot more sense why they would incorporate it. But I kind of wish it had tied a little bit closer together with the central plot, because it felt too removed for me. Mm. Also with the whole senator thing, like, what was that?
You know? Yeah. Something I did feel very much was that there were elements of the story that were just not incorporated well. You know, like, I felt very jarred every time we hopped between, the Second Salemers and Newt, and it was very easy to forget about everything else that was going on when you were stuck in one particular plot line. And I don't know if that's the script or the direction or the editing, but it was definitely something that I felt very strongly.
I almost kind of feel like it was like they ran out of time in a strange way. Like, I think the movie was an appropriate length. But it's almost just because we're, like, basically entering this new world. Like, we've been to the Wizarding World before, obviously, but we've never been to America in the Wizarding World. And you have to set up the idea of Makuza, and you have to set up the idea of, like, the climate and the temperament between these nomadges and the wizards. And then you have all of this stuff with Newt, and then you have all this extra stuff with Grindelwald. It's, like, it was great, but it also, like, I could have easily seen, like, if she wanted to, like, really dive deep into, like, the issues here, like, how, like, again, a full-fledged book would have been helpful, but also, like, how it could have been a little bit longer, or even, like, had seeped in, like, the ideas of some of the stuff that she brought up could have seeped into, like, the second movie and stuff, which we probably won't get to see since we're switching locations. But it's, I'm also kind of wondering if we're going to circle back to some of this stuff later on in the series.
I hope so, because otherwise because it sets up a lot. Removed.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, what about what's her face, Modesty? Like, I hope we see her again, or that she matters more, because there was such a huge deal about casting her too.
Right, she was the open caster. Like, she was the Ivana Lynch of the situation, wasn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then, of course, we have like we haven't really talked about Credence at all, but I thought, like, I mean, like, as an actor, Ezra Miller was like one of I mean, like, all of these actors did such a good job, but he's just, like, hard to look away from anytime he's on a screen because he's such an intense actor. And I loved this role for him. I really did.
Yeah. No, I did as well. And I felt that, I mean, the first time around, I found it very strange. I'm not going to lie. Like, his relationship with Graves, quote unquote, was weird. And I was like, I don't know what's going on here. it seems very weirdly exploitative, and like this kid is walking into another.
I have so much to say about this.
Yeah, it's odd, but watching it again, and I mean knowing that it's Grindelwald helps because you have a sense of like what he's being led into, and obviously he has an interest in Obscurial. But I thought that, I don't know, obviously Ezra Miller is such an expressive actor. I did feel like we didn't get to explore him as much as I wished we had. You know, we didn't get to see him like in a normal state. You know, we only got to see him as abused and kind of like, I mean, I personally read him as gay and looking for, you know, support on that front, as well as wanting to join the magical world. Like maybe he had conflated the two. Does that make sense? I mean, even the way he says,
no,
like, do you...
No, you're so right. And you know what's kind of sad and hilarious is that not only are we basically seeing this first indication that that LGBT characters exist in the universe that hasn't been said off canon, and but it's like an exploitative predator relationship, and also hello kill your gays trope, nice to meet you, I'm JK Rowling. I was like, there's so much, and I don't want to say too much about it because obviously whatever, like we will talk probably about it in future podcasts, but I did, when I saw it, oh, it made me so uncomfortable, and I was like, this is not what we were like. I think she misunderstood something here. But I do think that watching it again, knowing it was Grindelwald, and knowing that it was supposed to parallel what probably happened with Dumbledore, it made a lot of sense. And I'm just super disappointed that, and hoping that Credence somehow, despite all odds, comes back somehow, because I think he was a super intriguing character, whatever his sexuality, and I would love to see more of him. And I'm very, very sad that he, if he really was the first on-screen LGBT character to be shown in the Harry Potter universe, that A, it wasn't actually stated out loud, and B, that he had to die. I will just say that.
Yeah. No, I definitely hear that. I just, and I do hope that there is maybe some redemption for him, because he was in an odd position of being able to choose. Like, he wasn't exactly the same as, you know, the kid that Newt dealt with in Africa, you know, because he is an older person and knows what he's doing, and probably even knows what the Obscurial is, even if he doesn't have that language for it. But I think that, yeah, I mean, I almost like the subtlety of it in a story sense, that it wasn't like, you know, that we didn't need to read that into the character. But I agree that like the very touchiness between him and Graves made it worse. Like that tipped it over into like you guys should address this because it's weird.
Yeah, and now you're just putting bad connotations on that type of relationship, basically, you know.
Yeah, it's like half that, and then also like clearly like Credence is not only like magically stunted but emotionally stunted. Like he's very childlike despite the fact that he is older, and that just made it even more uncomfortable because it's like this guy is
just a predator, like,
preying
basically.
on. But you're right, it was, but even like in it when the trailers are coming out, I think everybody kind of felt like it was a very odd relationship, you know. And this is probably a very good time to just jump into Graves and Grindelwald and all of that stuff.
I feel like I feel bad. Like we maybe shouldn't like blame Graves.
No.
I know we're not. I just feel bad calling him Graves. Yeah. It's, you know.
I know. Well, this is okay. So let's just address the elephant in the room here. Like this was a huge plot twist. I did not see this coming. But I tend to turn my brain off when I go to the movies because I don't want to be that person that's like connecting the dots. Like, you know, while the movie's going, like, I'd rather just be surprised because it's more fun.
That's, like, exactly what I do whenever I go.
Because there's some people who are like, so I saw it the whole time. And I'm like, yeah, I guess like if I was looking for it, but I would rather be surprised because it's more fun. And you miss so much when you're trying to connect all the dots, you know,
in your brain. I wish I could turn that off. But no, I mean, yeah. So, I mean, Graves is Grindelwald. Oh my God. What is that from? Oh yeah. Glorious Ben. Sorry, Buffy reference. Ignore me. but like, I don't know. I saw some people say that maybe like they thought this was a last minute addition. I don't think so. That wouldn't have made any sense if like for the rest of the story, if that was true. But I do think I was a little bit disappointed by this reveal, honestly, because first of all, I wasn't emotionally prepared for Johnny Depp to appear on the screen at that moment. So I was like, oh no. But I also feel like Graves as a character would have been very interesting. And I also feel like it would have been nice. Like, I know Grindelwald is going to be the main villain of this quintet of movies, but I would have liked to see some other people involved, especially this early on. Like, I would have liked Graves to have been like a follower of Grindelwald and to see some different aspects of that. And knowing it was Grindelwald the whole time, I feel like, I don't know. It just makes me feel weird about Grindelwald in general. And I feel like the ambiguity of what that guy, like what he's going to be like as a villain, is kind of gone now. And we also lost the potential for Graves, who I actually thought, you know, Colin Farrell, I thought he did a fantastic job. I don't know why they couldn't just have made him play Grindelwald.
Can Sorry. I just say, I mean, he's not the greatest person either, like, to be fair.
No, but he's cleaned himself. He's, like, made an effort to, you know, be remorseful.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's all an act, but he has picked himself up a lot since, like, the early O's. So I think we kind of forgive him. But don't give him a pass.
That's
you know?
True. Yeah. But
he was also just so good in the role.
I mean, he was. And also, guys, like, his costume gives me very inappropriate feelings. Like, the way the scarf works and the way the coat works. And the way, I mean, like, I'm just like, oh my God. But I think for me, it's a little bit validated by the fact that if that hadn't happened, I think I would have come out of this movie going, like, I'm not sure why I was here. You know, like, I had a good time, it was fun, and I know we're going to do this again 4 more times, but I don't know why. And that reveal at the end, first of all, Graves did actually make more sense to me. Like, the whole execution thing made a lot more sense to me.
Right.
Knowing that it was Grindelwald. And because I don't think he was written as particularly, not insensible, but, like, definitely too oblique to make sense. And there was a reason for that. Mm. So I was able to kind of, like, watching it again, it was cool. It was like, oh, so that's why Grindelwald's doing that. Okay, cool. But I also, yeah, I mean, for me, it was like, I'm still on the fence about how wise this quintet of movies about a guy, a wee pebble being swept up into a great storm is going to work, you know? But I do kind of, I feel more like there was a purpose to it. The storytelling felt more purposeful for me. And I don't disagree with you. Like, it does come at the expense of all the work that Colin Farrell did, you know, that we you know, see him doing. But, you know, sometimes that happens in a story, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, it's the exact same thing. Like, we get to know Mad-Eye Moody, and then it's like, none of that was true, you know?
Right. Well, and that was my whole thing. Like, and maybe this is wishful thinking, but are we to assume this is, like, a Quirrell Voldemort situation where, like, he was, like, literally a parasite feeding off of Graves' body, which is very interesting considering what we know of Obscurials now? Or is this, like, a thing where he just, like, captured Graves and the real Graves is somewhere out there and we'll see him flying on a broomstick later, you know?
Yeah, but I sort of feel like that, I mean, I like to think so because I actually, again, like, I like the idea of Graves and I would like to see him pop up in future movies, but I think, I'm sorry to say a bad word now, but Cursed Child revealed another way of transforming yourself into a person, and that was literally just pointing your wand at someone and transforming them into a person. And if you can transform Harry into Voldemort, you can also probably just transform yourself into someone else just randomly.
So my theory is along those lines. I think that Graves was one of those... first of all, I was like, when we have those parallel shots of Grindelwald's hair and then Graves' hair, and I was like, it's weird that they have the same haircut. That's odd.
Yeah,
planning.
That's the same thing. But then I, you know what? I forgave it because I was like, must be a sign of the times.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay. They're all very trendy. But Graves
that upper or lower cut or whatever they call
right exactly like just fugly and a bad idea overall. But I think my personal theory is that Graves mentions that he was there when Grindelwald, like at Grindelwald's attack. So I think he was one of the wizards in the very first seconds of the movie who is killed by Grindelwald. Grindelwald realizes that he, or knows that he was is a member of Mikusa, and transfigures. I mean, we know he's a hugely powerful wizard, like just plain old transfigures himself into looking like Graves. And I think Graves is like way super dead.
Yeah. Oh, well.
That's so unfortunate. But it's like, it is like kind of funny though, because like you kind of alluded to in the beginning, it's like in Goblet of Fire, we get all this stuff that's Mad-Eye Moody and it's not all bad. But then we realize it was never really Mad-Eye Moody. So like, what are we to believe? You know? And so in like, in a way, it's kind of like, well, we never really knew Graves either. He was literally like, it was just Grindelwald the whole time. But one thing it did do is like, aside from the fact that like, you know, we didn't like, even though we didn't get to physically see Grindelwald the whole time, it did give us a really good scope of like his magical prowess, because he must be incredibly powerful. Most of the time he's doing wandless magic. Like, and that's like crazy, because we've been led to believe that not everybody can do that, but he's just kind of like making things fly around left and right with just his hands. So
yeah, Newt can't do it. I actually thought that moment was underplayed, like when the monkey steals his wand and he's trying to swap it back, which is hilarious, but then the monkey just kind of like apparates himself accidentally and drops the wand.
I know, I was like, way to go, monkey.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
You're a wizard, monkey.
Okay, well, this is probably, since we're talking about Grindelwald, let's talk a little bit more about Obscurials. We've kind of, like, scratched the surface here, but we haven't really got into it too much. What do we think overall about this new form of magic that we've been introduced to?
I love this. I thought it was so cool. Also because at first I was like, oh, so Newt is, like, was capturing a Dementor or something within the, because that's what it looked like.
I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, Dementors are creatures. I guess that works. Maybe it's like a baby Dementor.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's cute. But like a baby Dementor, yeah.
I can raise it to be good, not. I promise.
So cute. Yeah. So cute. Baby Dementor. No.
Yeah, but he would train it to be good. Like, yeah, it would be amazing.
It sucks out bad feelings.
Like it gives hugs, but it's like they're not deathly.
But no, but you know, the Obscurals, I thought it was a very cool thing. I'm also thinking and like feeling such a sadness in terms of the whole universe believability and the whole early ideas that Joe had of who wasn't one of the Dursleys displaying magic late in life, which she obviously scrapped. And I was like, did she probably didn't, but I was like, did she already have ideas for the Obscurials? Like, was that going to be like a big reveal, like Dudley or Petunia like conjured up a super powerful Obscurial or something like that, you know? So that kind of felt to me like it opened up the world, but also kind of limited it, because I was like, she probably just came up with it for this movie. But either way, I think it's cool. And I like this new aspect.
It's interesting you mentioned that, though, because, like, the big theory swirling around the fandom is that perhaps Ariana Dumbledore herself was an Obscurial. So if she had, there is a possibility she had been planning something like this for years and years and years. And if we're thinking that, like, perhaps, like, I guess my big theory was that, like, Grindelwald, like, I guess, like, Obscurials are, like, his, like, not his Horcruxes, but, like, his obsession. Kind of like Voldemort's obsession was Horcruxes. So Grindelwald maybe is the idea of these Obscurials, and maybe trying to figure out how to wield their magic for his purposes and stuff. So if we think about it that way, it would kind of just make sense why he, you know, went back and that whole confrontation occurred. Like maybe some of it had to do with the fact that he was trying to harness that power early on.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it makes a lot of sense for Ariana Dumbledore to have been the victim of an Obscurial. I am curious, though, because, I mean, again, lack of familiarity for a long time with Deathly Hallows, but, like, it seemed to me that Obscurial formed when wizards were suppressed and wasn't she, I mean, she wasn't suppressed as a child, right? Like, she was raised as a pretty
normal wizard. Because she had like, the Muggles attacked her, and they basically, she lost her ability to do magic.
Oh, forget it then. Then that's totally what happened.
and you know what's so cool about that, too, is that that kind of brings in, well, is that why Grindelwald sought out Dumbledore? It wasn't actually to have an ally in his search for the Deathly Hallows. It was to get access to Ariana and bring out the Ariana.
From I know. Ariana. I keep seeing it, and I'm like, wait, is that her screen name or something? Like,
But yeah, no. But you know, like that could add a whole new dimension to their past.
And also remember, she accidentally killed her mother.
Mm-hmm.
In a magical explosion. So it's like, I think all of these, like, these building blocks were always there. We just never paid them any mind because we didn't, like, you know, how were we supposed to know? Final book, you know, all this stuff getting introduced. Just like, oh, unimportant. We'll just, like, important, but we can set it aside.
But backstory also.
Yeah, but backstory. Who knew that it would be, like, actual backstory that would get, you know, further delved into later.
Yeah, which is something I'm really happy with in this. You know, I was a little bit leery when the idea of the Obscurial was initially introduced, because I'm always leery when established properties are like, and here's a big new thing, you know. But I do think that this movie offers a lot of solid ideas and interesting ideas that we can think about and theorize about, which is, I mean, you know, part of the reason why we love Potter, right? Because it's mystery. And it's all based in emotion and in pain. And, you know, I think Joe is just the master at that. Like, I recently reread Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone, whatever. And the freaking Mirror of Erised, like, it's so good. It's so good.
Okay, we are running a little bit long, so I do want to, before we get into listener feedback and stuff like that, which we do want to do, go back and talk about Tina and Queenie and then Jacob, because we haven't talked about them really at all. So what would you guys like to talk about first?
Well, I have a bit of a controversial question, and I'm fully expecting you guys to disagree with this, but I don't care. So when I was watching this movie, I thought Queenie was amazing. I was not a huge fan of Queenie. I felt like she was, I don't know, I felt like she was a bit of a, I don't want to say stereotype, but it's the kind of character you expect to show up in a movie like this, and I did not really appreciate that. But I do also think that I was thinking, I know they've done a lot to say, oh, Tina isn't the new Hermione, but the way I saw it, she kind of was the new Hermione. Like, this was what I imagined that Hermione would have been like if she had grown up without the influence of Harry and Ron. You know, she wouldn't have learned to, you know, the way that she was treating Newt, like, she kept bringing him into the ministry to regain her standing, and, you know, she kept, even when those beasts were at risk, she still brought them in, even knowing they would take the beast away and probably kill them, and all that kind of stuff. Like, I felt like this was a Hermione that hadn't learned that, you know, books and cleverness, there are more important things, basically. And Queenie just felt like Luna 2.0 to me. Like, that, I think that at the end of the day, that was kind of what I took away from her character that made me a little bit disappointed with her, that she didn't feel fresh. I'm really curious what you guys think about this. I will just reiterate, I loved Tina, and I think she is very underrated, even though I agree she didn't have enough to do in this movie.
I think that that's why, when I said earlier that I felt like she fell flat, and that is why, because I know that she could have been more, but I'm going to set those feelings aside, because I feel like maybe she was just, you know, a casualty of time. Basically, it's not really like it for this movie specifically. It was more important to set up like Newt and all this other stuff. But I do hope we get more of her, because I can see the potential for her to be like such a great character. But I feel like we've only just scratched the surface. And I think that that's why a lot of people like were just kind of like she's not like the front runner for like favorite character in this. But I think that she's going to like we're going to have more opportunities to fall in love with her. And so I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw the movie, I came out thinking, like, I don't know anything about Tina. She's a wooden board. I don't get any of this. And the only scene of her that moved me at all was the execution scene. But I still feel that she is underwritten. I don't feel as negatively. I mean, I can see her motivations a little bit more. Like, I agree with you. Like, there's a lot of Hermione in her. I actually disagree. There is definitely a lot of Hermione in her. And I'm, like, trying to make a mental argument against it. And I'm like, no, that's what Hermione would do. Which, like, I mean, Hermione. You know. Yeah.
Which, obviously, like, if you haven't seen the movies, like, obviously, the movie Hermione is a very, very different creature from book Hermione. But I think if we just let ourselves remember what Hermione is actually like in the books, I think this Tina is very close to that.
Although I do think she is more of a risk taker. Like, I don't think non-Harry Hermione.
But she doesn't think things through as much as Hermione might.
Well, yeah. I mean, Hermione would never attack a group of nomadges, you know, at an anti-witch meeting ever. You know, she would never
do that. She's also more cutthroat, though, because, like, you mentioned Selena, she's just, like, trying to get ahead. She's trying to get back into that Auror program. And she'll basically do anything to get there, including, you know, not, like, completely think things through. But at the same time, she also thinks that she's all of these characters think they're doing the right thing, which is a very interesting idea, because she thinks that, you know, because, like, there's a ban on magical creatures, like, in her brain, like, there's no exceptions
and it's proven dangerous and very costly
but that's where I see the Hermione in her in that decision that she made.
But I mean, also, she didn't intend, and I think it's important to point out, she didn't intend to bring Newt and Jacob and the case in front of an entire council of, you know, like, the World Council of Magic. You know, she just intended to go to the president, I don't remember her name, you know, and be like, here it is, I found it, it's all in here, you know, and I there is a difference there. I will say, Queenie, a lot of her doesn't work for me. Like, I do not think that somebody reading somebody's mind in a visual form works. It just doesn't work for me. I keep thinking I miss dialogue. I keep thinking, like, there's stuff that is not in this conversation that should be there. For me, it doesn't work. However, I do think that she is more, like, she's Luna-esque, but in a completely different way and for different reasons. Like, you know, yeah, they both have that kind of, like, floaty whatever, but she's also not like, ooh, bow chuckles and blah, blah, blah. She has more of an almost self-preservation instinct.
I mean, she definitely had her moments. Like Luna's very, I don't want to say passive, but in a way she kind of is. Luna is very passive through most of the books, and Queenie definitely took action in a way that I appreciated. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, like, what I don't like about Queenie and characters like Queenie is that when you choose to have your character in the very first moment she's introduced, your secondary female characters lay eye on the secondary male character and instantly fall in love, and that's her arc. Like, I hate that. And so many movies do that. You know, when you have, like, oh, well, here's your main couple. Now the secondary characters have to be paired up. And it just happens like that. I really balk at that. I think it's a cheap way to set up a romance. But I did like their final scene, though. It's not that I didn't like them. I felt like it's a overdone thing.
I was trying to figure out why it didn't bother me that much. Because theoretically it should, right? Like, I mean, that relationship is, like, the classic, like, schlumpy guy who brings nothing to the table gets the gorgeous girl. But
it's because Jacob is so amazing, I think.
Jacob is great. And also, I get why, in a weird way, Queenie is attracted to him. Like, I feel like she's a lonely person. You know, like, we know that she is flirted with by every guy and possibly some of the women in Macusa, you know? Like,
she can read all of their intentions, and suddenly here comes someone else who is so different.
Exactly. And the fact that, you know, she's probably not treated that well. Like, the look that they give her when she drops that tray is just like, where's our coffee, girl, you know? I think that there is more depth there. I also appreciated that, like, the romance between, what helped it for me is that the romance between Newt and Tina is definitely set up, but it's not active.
But it wasn't, yeah, exactly. Like, it wasn't like a love.
So I was more comfortable doing that with Queenie and Jacob than I was, you know, with, you know, than I would have been had we already had, like, this, you know, oh, they're secretly attracted to each other, as opposed to what we get, which is, like, they really, really like each other, and, like, aren't really sure what to do with that yet.
By the way, and I know this is like not to linger because I know we do have to move on, but that entire dinner scene to me felt very strange. Again,
because nobody's talking.
Exactly. I was just going to say that. Like, that's a prime example of characters just exchanging glances and you having no idea what's going on in their minds. Because like the way that Newt and Tina, look, we're looking at each other. And even later when Newt and Jacob were lying in their beds and Tina came in and they all looked at each other. And I was like, what? What's the emotion? Like, what's happening in your brains right now?
No, a better like, version of that scene. We're not all
Queenie. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly. A better version of that scene is Newt constantly making excuses and Tina, like, heading off those excuses. And then eventually her being like, look, you're staying. You know, yeah. I'm locking
because
the door with
Char. Because they all just kind of looked so pained, but you weren't really sure where that pain was coming from, I think, at the end of the day. Anyway.
Okay, let's move on to everybody's new favorite character, Jacob.
Oh, yes.
I loved him so much, you guys. I don't know who wrote this down, but I loved that he was like a muggle, mm-hmm. and you know he was like literally all of us, like, finding out all of this is real, and I think that was so beautiful.
Yeah, like I loved that's one of the things that I love the most about the movie is how they found, because obviously in Philosopher's Stone it's Harry and to some extent Hermione are the newcomers into the magical world and Ron is kind of their guide, and in this it's Newt and Jacob. You know, Jacob is kind of the Harry and Newt is kind of the Hermione in what they know and don't know about the magical world, and Tina is kind of the one who knows everything that's going on and gives exposition, right? And so, and I felt that was a very nice way of doing it in a very different way, and Jacob and his bread, like he's the new Peter, you know, like the boy with the bread. And
ugh, don't
sorry.
You just, you know what, the part that like I was already kind of like sold on him, but the part that really like sold me was when he goes back home and he like he goes, I'm sorry grandma, and looks up at the picture of his grandma, and I was like, he could like just be like an extra brother that I never knew my that's totally something that it was just so great. I loved that.
I also thought that it was a tiny moment, but I thought it was played very well, because in another version of that interaction or whatever it is, the picture of grandma is this like sour, severe, ugly, you know, woman. And she's smiling and she looks delightful.
She's everyone's grandma. Yeah. She's the grandma that feeds you and says, you don't have a grandma, I'll be your grandma.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That's my grandma. You guys, I know. I could just tell from her picture that she would be that grandma. But yeah, I mean, like, Dan Fogler as well was like one of my favorite parts of this movie, because he, even though he doesn't, you know, like we've talked about how like this was not a very dialogue heavy movie, he does so much with just his body language. Like that scene in the bank is like so telling, when the banker asks him for collateral, he just like gestures at his pastry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or even like when
you
he's
always
walking
know
away.
What he's thinking. You know?
Right. And I love that, because he is a good example of somebody that did like the most he could with like what little he had to say, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and he's, you know, he has that luxury being a largely comedic character, but it's true. Still very, very clear what he's thinking and why he's doing what he's doing, whereas it's not so much for the others.
He could have also easily fallen into the comic relief trap, but I think they avoided that both very cleverly by giving some of the comic relief to Newt, you know, like in the mating dance scene and other stuff, and also like allowing Newt to be the clumsy one at sometimes, but also just in making his character have so many layers and have, we know what his hopes and dreams are. We don't know what the hopes and dreams are of any of the other characters when you really think about it. But we know that about Jacob very clearly. We know what his obstacles are. We know what his challenges, etc. And I think that worked really well. And I also just, you know, when we got towards the end and they wiped his memory, I was like, what the, like, how stupid. Like, I was so mad. I was like, here's your best character and you're basically writing him out of the story. So I was very, very relieved by the final scene and very curious what you guys think is, you know, is going to come up for him, because he better come back. Like, I'm going to be so mad
if
he's not.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, too. And I was, I caught this in my second go-around, because I think that we all just assumed that everybody got obliviated, but they didn't necessarily get obliviated. And And when I watched it the second time, it was like the line that popped out to me about the sleeping evil was that it represses, like it takes away bad memories. So it would make sense that he would like he would still have some like vague recollection of some of the good memories. Cause,
yeah,
like
he, the beasts. That
yeah, the beasts and stuff. So it was very cleverly done. And then, like, you know, there's this, you know, he gives, like, this expression, like, he knows who Queenie is towards
what,
the end. So
I
really hope that
what
he
I
does
just
come
wonder,
back.
Right, because what I just wonder is that, I mean, obviously we have to figure that the next movie jumps a little bit in time because, you know, they do have to, they have five movies to get to 1945.
And they haven't started filming yet, so this movie is not coming out.
Yeah,
like next year
forever. Yeah, but I'm just wondering like how, because at the end of the day, like we need this character to come back. Like I think we can all agree that if he doesn't come back, we're going to be a lot less disappointed about the sequel, or less, I'm sorry, less excited about the sequel. But if he's going to come back, if he doesn't have his memory back, he's going to have to like relearn the magical world, which is going to be like a repeat of the first one, which will be weird. If he does get his memory back, then what was the point of wiping it in the first place?
I mean, as far as I see it, the reason why they chose to do that was because Jacob needed to make a choice at the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, that very much felt to me like it was an active choice on his part. I'm not sure that it will work, but I hope it's a couple years and they're already married and it's just like, we had that weird time. He doesn't remember everything that happened over that time.
Maybe he doesn't remember Newt, and then Newt comes back and then he has to be, because if he remembers Queenie and Tina, but not Newt, or like something like that.
Well, I feel like Queenie is breaking the rules at this point. Mm-hmm. Like I don't think she was supposed to go. I think the end of the plan was like, here's your bakery, we love you, love Anonymous, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And then Queenie is definitely like, nope, I love this guy, I'm not letting this happen.
Well, the other thing we have to think about too in regards to Jacob is like, how long can he feasibly tag along with everybody else, because he doesn't have the added protection of having magic to defend himself.
We'll just put him in the hockey uniform again.
Oh yeah, it's true. But I don't know if we're gonna see him on like the front lines of battle when it comes to, you know what I mean, when it comes down to that, because like they would just be so worried that something would happen. But you're right, he can help out like you know, on, you know, on the side. That was my other thing, is like, I'm wondering if like, you know, because so much of what happens with Grindelwald parallels with the Second World War and stuff, like I'm wondering if we're going to see a situation where he gets drafted or something like that. Like he gets pulled away.
I feel like he's too old to get drafted. Well, maybe not.
You think so?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know.
I mean, if they need all the manpower, I mean, well then again, like America kind of swoops in towards the end of the Second World War. Like they don't really like get into the thick of it. So maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, he wasn't like a soldier. He was in the
cleanup or whatever. Yeah. What did he say?
I forget what it was called, but yeah. Also, on a separate note, very interesting little like drop that they say where they're like, oh, Scamander, the war hero? No, that's his brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, that just adds a lot of stuff to Newt's character right there. And the look on his face, like he kind of clenches and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Frog Scamander. The war hero.
But you're right, like that I thought that was interesting too, because it does add this layer of like maybe that's the reason why he felt like such an outsider at school, because everybody was always comparing him to his much cooler, much more accomplished brother. So
kind of like Albus Severus. Sorry.
The black sheep of, there's so many black sheep.
We don't know anything about Albus Severus. Let us not talk about it.
Nope. But no, yeah, it's I'm very interested to explore this world. I'm almost sad that, like, I mean, they mentioned Ilvermorny. We didn't get to see any of it. I'm like, now we're going to leave America and leave all that behind. Like,
oh, I'm actually fine. I felt like none of these people are school-aged. It would have been super weird if we'd seen, like, a ton. I actually thought the name drop of Ilvermorny was a little awkward, because I was like, I don't know what you're talking about school. You guys are clearly, like, in your 30s.
Well, maybe they have to go, like, confer with a professor or something on something that happens later, or, like, the headmaster comes over and helps out or something, you know?
Yeah, like, I could see that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, I feel like they will, there'll be a California episode, quote unquote, you know? I feel like that will be a thing, you know, because they're going all over the world, so.
Was that Gemma Chan in that scene?
That is Gemma Chan. Mm. She's one of the ministers.
I hope she comes from back. Another
place. Yeah. Yeah.
That's, like, the most diversity we got in this whole movie was that scene with all the diplomats from around the world. Yep. Anyway, well, we could probably talk about this forever, and like Selena hinted, maybe we'll have to do a Fantastic Beasts Part 2 special. You have, like, some bigger, broader wrap-up questions, so let's start with, like, if anybody has any, like, favorite scenes or favorite characters, favorite beasts, things like that. We can just go around the table and talk a little bit about that. That's always a good place to start.
Yeah, so I think, again, sort of reiterating what I've already said, I feel like in a movie that felt a little bit choppy in editing, and again, this is an issue that I have brought up with several of David Yates's Harry Potter movies. Half-Blood Prince is a great example of a horribly edited film. I loved everything to do with beasts. I loved everything in the suitcase. I loved seeing Newt, because again, Newt's character was extremely intriguing to me, and the way he connected to those beasts was something that I think adds a lot of heart to the story and a lot of heart to this character, and actually makes him potentially one of my favorite characters in this whole universe, depending on how things develop. So all of that I loved, and I will also just wave my flag for Tina. I think the movie did not do her justice, but I see the shadows of what could be a very intriguing, interesting character there. The end.
I agree. I think that the beasts play beautifully, like I said, off of Newt and his character, and I want a Niffler so much. And my brother, I was sitting next to my brother, and he was like, they destroy houses, Nifflers do. Yeah, and I was like, I don't care.
I miss that. No, I don't understand why everyone wants Nifflers. Like, they will mess you up.
Because they are so cute.
But I like the idea of what, like, you know, one of my, I loved that. I think that, like, obviously a lot of the Niffler stuff was there for, like, you know, for, like, the younger audience, it's just, like, a fun thing to play with. But I just, like, love that scene in the bank where he's just like, Michael!
Yeah.
He's like, you come any closer, I will run.
And when he's, like, standing still in that jewelry shop so Newt won't notice. Oh, I loved it.
Or he's, like, reaching out because there's more shiny things he wants.
Oh, my God. It was so cute. I also thought the whatchamacallit was cute. The
Bowtruckle.
Well, obviously, Bowtruckle's very cute.
Oh, go on. Sorry.
No, the demiguys.
The demiguys. So I love the demiguys. Yeah. I was gonna ask you the boat in that nightclub scene. Was Newt really gonna give up the boat struggle? Because he said he wasn't, but when he gave it up was one of the many times that he cried. And I was like, was he really actually gonna give it up? Like, what the hell is happening?
I feel like he would have figured out how to get him back. There's no way. Like, everything we know about Newt points to this idea that he would never.
Yeah, but then he was crying.
I think he wanted to get him back, but I don't think he necessarily had a plan right away and was like, this might be it, but I'm going to do my darndest to get him back. Mm-hmm. And also, like, even the second time I watched it, I was like, I might be crying, like, a little bit, like, you know.
Yeah, that was really cute. Let's see. We've already kind of talked about things that we didn't really like. Was there anything we wanted to see maybe a little bit more of? I know some people were a little disappointed about, like, the lack of Ilhormorny and the fact that it was just kind of, like, tacked in at the end and stuff, but
I think Micha kind of nailed it, like, more dialogue, more character exposition, more setup of what these people really want and why they're doing what they're doing, because I felt like there was so much left out. Also with Tina's, you know, the stance she took against Credence, like, you understood the bare bones of it, but I needed more.
Yeah. I mean, I personally also wanted more Jewish stuff because, like, the Goldstein sisters are technically Jewish, and I, like, didn't get any references to that beyond their name.
And I think this kind of goes into, like, my other question for us is, like, where we would like to see it go from here. And I do kind of hope that even though we're going to be globetrotting, that we do end up, like, circling back around to America, because there's so much here that it would just be a shame to see it go untapped. You know, just like specifically with these ideas of that Joe has brought up in terms of like nomad wizard relations and things like that. So,
yeah, even but things I guess
like
we will.
Like the death penalty, like, you know, which is something that we didn't see. Like that was like a huge commentary on society, but like also like so American that it makes sense for her to have like put that in there.
Although the I thought of it just as their version of the veil. Which I maybe, was, like, waiting for that comparison to be made. But no, I mean, I guess we will do, like, you know, Serafina Pickery. I'm sure we'll see more of her.
Does anybody have any other theories they want to put on the record in terms of what we might see?
Credence.
Young Dumbledore, maybe.
Credence will be back by movie 3 or 4.
Oh, my God. I hope so.
He will. I'm telling you, he will. Just when we have forgotten him, he will be back.
I hope so, because also again with the Dumbledore Credence parallel, there's so much there that could, you know, that a point that should be made there. But I mean, definitely, we're going to be in Paris for the next movie, which is going to be very interesting. I want to say that, I mean, obviously, I'm curious about how Jacob will return, and I hope that he will be integral to the story and have his memory back, because I think that would be a wasted opportunity if he didn't. I'm also just curious, like, about how the Fantastic Beasts are going to figure into this, because you sort of have, even though Newt kind of was instrumental in taking Grindelwald down and that whole line that maybe I know we have some listener feedback that brings that up too, that might connect them in future. I feel like he's going to try to continue his creature gathering adventure and keep being drawn back into the Grindelwald fight kind of against his wishes. And I think the second movie will see him trying to carry on with his life, because I don't necessarily think he wants a part in this fight. But something will draw him back in, and I think this is maybe more of a hope than a prediction, but I really want to see Tina take on more of a major role, because I think it's very easy to fall into the love interest trap for her. And I think, you know, when Joe says that she's her favorite character and that she's very connected to her, I believe her, but I would like to see evidence of that on screen next time.
I think the dynamic between them leads into that. Like, I can definitely see it happening. So far, we really do have Tina as the, like, almost the representative of, like, humanity, and Newt being like, I don't care about what you guys are doing, I'm gonna go with my beasts, you know? So I feel like if they work together again, it will be Tina being like, yo, we have to go, like, save the wizarding world, and Newt will be like, but my creatures, you know? And I'm curious about, actually, is how the creatures play in, because they were such an integral, like MacGuffin, sort of, so to speak, of this movie. And then, like, they can't do that again, you know? They can't be like, oh, the creatures escape in Paris this time. It's like, no, that's not going to work.
Also, like, I mean, like, Newt Scamander, like, from what we know of him, like, he's a ministry, he works in the ministry, like, before he starts writing his book and things like that. So it's very, I think, like, he's a very easy character to kind of steep into, like, what's going on in the government behind the scenes and things like that. And I think I want to say, like, he also had something to do with, like, the werewolf registry, if I remember correctly. So I'm kind of wondering if, like, maybe that feeds into this idea of, like, of these people that feel like they've been cast aside by society, you know, like, it would just, like, build more animosity towards, like, what Newt believes in versus what, like, what Grindelwald, like, is preaching, you know, to these people that do feel marginalized. We have to say goodbye to Michal.
But I just wanted to ask one thing. Michal, before you go, do you have a prediction, because I do, of a title for the sequel?
Oh, gosh, I've been thinking about that. I don't. I feel like...
I do.
What is it?
Mine is Too Fantastic, Too Furious.
Mine was just a little bit more conventional. I was going to go for Fantastic Beasts and How to Tame Them.
I'll be curious to see if they go with that kind of naming convention, like Fantastic Beasts and, or it's just like...
I just really don't want it to be Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them Too.
Right.
You know, I think it's like, going to be Fantastic Beasts, colon, and then like some kind of descriptive mysterious
Grindelwald title. Right. Yeah. Rises.
The Dark Rider.
Grindelwald escapes. He's the real Fantastic Beast. He's got to find.
Because lol, America, Dumbledore. You really can't keep hold of this guy.
I know. Oh my gosh. All right. Well, Michal, thank you so much for hopping on and chatting with us about this.
Of course. Thank you for having me. So,
yeah, of course. Anytime. We're excited to have you back at some point down the line.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Yay. Thank you.
No
thank
problem, you. Guys. This was fun. I'll speak to you later.
Okay, bye.
And then there were two.
Oh.
Okay,
two
well,
Fantastic
like,
Beasts.
Two Fantastic Beasts. If we had descriptive titles for our specials, that's what we would call it. I think like the last question I wanted us to address is like, I mean, especially because I know that you and Marima were so... You were like treading with caution for Fantastic Beasts. So what I want to know is like, does this, after seeing the first movie, does it make you excited to see the rest of them? Or are you still kind of treading with caution?
No, it does. And I think sort of what Michal sort of said as well towards the beginning is that the issues that I have with this movie were mainly pacing and dialogue problems and lack of elaboration on some of the character backgrounds and those kinds of superficial things. Like at its core, I think it's a very, very interesting story that Joe has decided to tell. And I think the visuals of it are so beautiful. And so as much as I might say, oh, I wish it was a book because I want to hear what these people are thinking. Like, yeah, but I also see why they chose to make this a cinematic experience, because so much joy of this experience of watching the movie comes from the imaginative, the way that they've imagined the beasts and the way they've imagined the world and the way that they set all this up. So they've really opened for a visual interpretation of the Wizarding World that I can get behind far more than I ever could for the Harry Potter movies. In those movies, I felt like everything was mechanical and flat. In this, I just think it's magical and beautiful. So for that reason alone, and because I love Jacob and Newt and Tina, and I'm sure Queenie will grow on me, whatever, because I love them so much, I am very, very, very excited to return to this universe. And I think some of the issues, it doesn't erase the issues that I have with the story, and it doesn't erase the fact that we seriously need some diversity in the sequel. Like, this is kind of ridiculous. But, you know, overall, it's setting up a really interesting movie quintet.
I agree, and I think that like one of the my main concerns was like not being able to, before seeing this, is not being able to wrap my mind around how Newt was going to play into this huge epic story of Grindelwald's rise and Grindelwald's demise. But yeah, after seeing this, I can kind of like, I don't have any like firm you know, theories as to how it's gonna go, but I can see how it can work. And I think that that was kind of like one of the most important things that I was looking for when I went into this, was just like it, seeing if I felt like it could work to blend yeah. these two together. And I have more hope for that.
Me too. Like the it. Worry was that Newt and his story would drown in the much bigger sort of background thing that was going on. But I think Newt and his beasts were the thing I enjoyed most, and just being in this universe and being with this character is such a huge part of the enjoyment. Like, I was watching the movie, I didn't want it to end, you know. I kept sort of yeah. being like, I hope there's more, I hope this isn't the end, I hope you know. And it went on for a long time, but in a good way. Like, I felt like I had been made to be a part of something special, and I really, really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a really nice like welcome back to the idea of the Wizarding World. Like, even though it wasn't like the Wizarding World we grew up with, it still felt like we were coming back to somewhere special.
Yeah.
And that was really great. Shall we move into listener feedback? Is there anything else you wanted to say to, you know, as like kind of like an end thought?
That's it.
Okay, sounds good. So you guys, we asked and you guys delivered. We have so much of your feedback. We're really excited to get to it. We're going to kick things off with some emails. If you want to email us your thoughts on Fantastic Beasts or anything else we talk about in the future, you can reach us at hype@hypeable.com. Do you want to get this first email here?
Yeah, sure.
From Kate?
So So, yeah, so this is from Kate. She says, "Hey, Hypes, I went to see Fantastic Beasts last night at a midnight screening. Having heard really great reviews, I was excited and I wasn't let down. I really enjoyed Eddie Redmayne as Newt, and I thought that Jacob was a delightful addition. Although I thought that Tina was a little flat at the start, I loved her by the end, and I loved her relationship with Queenie. I was pretty unimpressed with the CGI that was used for all of the beasts. I was hoping they would use more practical effects. I actually found the beast to be the least interesting part. I enjoyed the world building much more. Seeing Mac Yuza was amazing. I wasn't a fan of Johnny Depp as Grindelwald. Colin Farrell did such a good job. I wish they could have kept using him somehow, but I understand what they were going for. Also, Zoe Kravitz as Leda Lestrange. I'm so excited to see what they do with the storyline. I'm really interested in the new magic that JK introduced, especially the idea of the Obscurus. I wonder if that would have happened to Harry if he had never gone to Hogwarts. I think that this is leading up to Ariana Dumbledore and explaining how she killed Kendra. Although the diversity of the film was disappointing overall, I think the film was a great start to a new series. I can't wait 2 years for the next one. Love the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Kate." Yeah, we did not really talk about Johnny Depp as Grindelwald, Pam.
we kind of skipped over that. Here's the thing. Like, I know that we're like, he's not our first choice, but because we're stuck with him, I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
I don't like that sentence. Sorry.
No, I just like, I was trying to put aside like my personal feelings and just focus on like the acting. Because I feel like that's just going to make me a much happier person.
So what did
you
think about the acting?
I feel like there wasn't enough to go off of. It was just like, oh, he's there. I think I was like more shocked by the reveal. I think the reveal was like the best part of having him there because I wasn't expecting it. But he didn't like, there's no way to really, for me to form a valid opinion. I do want to say that, like, the problem was that I did not, like, that last line that he utters at Newt, which I had to go look up in the screenplay, he says, "Will we die just a little?" And that,
what does that mean?
What exactly? And I was so,
that's like...
That's
a song lyric.
That's why I got confused. Isn't it, like, that is a song, isn't it?
Die a little, just a little, cry just a little. A little.
Yeah, okay.
It's like from One Tree Hill or something.
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. So that I think that's why. Anyway, I was so like wrapped up in trying to figure out like what does this mean that.
Did we die just a little? Does that mean that? Will we? Is die that like just a Horcrux? A Horcrux reference?
I don't know.
Like, I don't know.
Or,
like, what's
or is
it mean?
Like?
Does he
is
have
it
a connection
like the,
to Newt?
Or is it like a metaphorical? Will we die just a little because like we refuse to like. We want to scuttle around in the dark and we're repressing ourselves. Like, are we dying in that respect? I don't know. So anyway, but long story short, I was so wrapped up in trying to figure out what the heck that like one line basically that he had aside from "Do you think you can hold me?" meant.
You know what I didn't. And again, I think, I mean, look, we don't know what he's going to be like and whatever. But I will say, like, first of all, I was so. Like, I just keep coming back to, I wish they could have gotten Colin Farrell as Grindelwald, because I think he adds both the creepiness and the, but also he draws you in, he compels you in a way that I just don't think that Johnny Depp does to the same extent. I'm really sorry. I just, on a pure acting level, I don't think that Johnny Depp is going to be as enticing as Colin Farrell would have been. That said, too, I was very taken aback by the way that they had made him up. Because, again, like, I think one of the things that we were talking about before we saw him in this movie was, now that we know that Johnny Depp is going to be Grindelwald, at least we would hope that he would be a more human and less Tim Burton character-y Grindelwald. And I was very disappointed because the way that he was... I mean, it looked like Willy Wonka all over again, in my opinion. Like, it was very
because he was so
overdone.
Pale and stuff.
Yeah, and that, like, he almost looked like a cartoon character in a sea of very real people, and that does not have me very hopeful for the future of that character.
I kind of wonder if, like, I know that they always, like even Heyman said, oh, like, when we're casting young Dumbledore, we're not looking for somebody that looks like... like Michael Gambon or Richard Harris, but I almost kind of wonder if they were trying to, like, because Jamie Campbell Bauer is pale and blonde, like they were trying to make him resemble him a bit more because they had already.
But he wasn't pale, him. Like he was white, like completely. Was my screen wrong? Like, was he not like sheet white in the face?
I don't know.
He was white and bloated.
Well, bloated maybe. You know, I think Johnny Depp has gained a little bit of weight as he's gotten older.
Okay, well,
so
I'm sorry, Johnny.
I don't think we can fault him for that. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like movies have a tendency to make their villains, especially fantasy movies, very ghastly looking and yeah. It's like almost like a contrast.
But that just makes me sad because I think kind of like what you were saying earlier, like the interesting thing about Grindelwald is he's not a villain in the way that Voldemort is. You know, he's a lot more enticing. He's a lot more, you know, the way that Graves was like seducing Credence onto his side. That's the kind of Grindelwald that I was actually hoping for.
Well, the thing too is like with Voldemort, and we'll have to get into like the. I think we definitely need to do a Fantastic Beasts part two somehow.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Special part two. But I think that with Voldemort, like the reason he looks the way he does is because he's literally whittled away at like all aspects of humanity he had left. Just because, like, you know, he's like literally just hacked away at his soul, and so he looks inhuman because of that. So yeah. I'm hoping that like Grindelwald's like kind of like, you know, he's got like two eyes that are a different color, like all this like stuff that's going on is explained in some way, because if we get some kind of explanation, I will not completely forgive, but I can overlook some of the zanier like aspects of his physical appearance, basically. You know what I mean? Like, because if it makes sense in the plot, if it doesn't make sense, it's just like, well, he decided he needed to look this way for no reason, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we have another email here from Anne, who says, "Hi guys, just got home from Fantastic Beasts and I have so many thoughts. I loved the movie. Eddie's Newt was amazing and I can truly see him carrying 5 movies. As a Thundurbird, I was happy to see my Ilvermorny house mascot play such a big role. Thundurbirds represent. I need a picket in my life. That little bow truckle stole the show. And that laugh, though. Jacob was the breakout star and will be sad if they don't find a way of being a way to make him in the, put him in the other movies." Sorry. I stumbled over my words there. Anne continues, "The big question, am I the only one who got major Ariana vibes from the Modesty Credence storyline? I know Newt said the Obscurial he met was from Africa, but when he was talking to Credence in the tunnel and said it was a young girl, I thought he was going to say her name was Ariana, made actual reveal of Graves' real identity a total dud. Not a fan. Can't wait for the next movie. Best wishes and thanks for the great show, Anne."
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. We talked a little bit about Ariana, so hopefully that satisfied your thirst for, you know, some talk of Ariana and Obscurials and things like that. Overall, I guess our listener's not a fan of Johnny still.
Yeah, well.
Okay, we're going to move into some comments here that we got from our Twitter at Hypeable Hype and a few from our Instagram, which is also at Hypeable
Yay!
Hype. Yay! Plug for both. We'll just go, let's just go back and forth. I'll take the first one here from Shauna, who says, "Can't believe the twist Fantastic Beasts got away with. Amazing. So many questions. Like, did Graves go after Newt for his Dumbledore connection? And how did Newt know to reveal him at the end? Also, Queenie and Jacob forever. And was there a real Graves? Didn't he supposedly come from an older Auror family? What happened to him?" Shauna, these are all questions we have too, and I hope that they get addressed.
And Mariah Lovegood says, "I loved it. I laughed so hard and had such a good time. It had the same wizarding magic, but completely new adventure." I think, yeah, that's it. Like, I ultimately just had a really good time at the cinema.
Yeah, I totally agree. Max Den Hartog says, "Saw it a few days ago and loved it. Fantastic story, actors, and visuals. Only thing I disliked was Johnny Depp's performance."
Yeah, well, Shelly says, "Did you guys also think the interactions between Graves and Credence were super creepy? Made more sense after the Graves reveal, in my opinion." Yeah, I mean, yes, again, after the Graves reveal, it felt more like a like an intentional connection to what probably happened with Dumbledore, it still feels very, very, very unfortunate in the large scheme of representation in the Harry Potter universe. I'm sorry, but I think it was very terribly done. But I understood what they were trying to do with it, you know, obviously. It just makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. The Smoo says, sorry if I asked already, but when Grindelwald says, will we die just a little, what do you think that means? We kind of theorize a little bit on this.
It's clearly, you know, promotion for his band.
Yeah, exactly. I want to know who sings that song. It's like, will we die a little, cry just a little, something like that.
Cry a little, die a little. It's Bethany Joy Lenz. It's literally on the Wandering Hill soundtrack.
The one I'm thinking about is Faith Hill, actually. Faith Hill's Cry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the same anyway, song.
Maybe. Okay. Anyway, that's either here nor there.
I feel like it was meant to be poetic and intriguing, and I kind of just thought it was cheesy. So...
I guess
we'll see what happens.
So these are our last two comments are from Instagram. Like we said, if you want to follow that, it's at Hypeable Hype. Do you want to take this first one here, Selena?
Yes. MJK1988I. No, I is part of the... Anyway, I love the movie so much, and the IMAX effects were very cool. My favorite scene is the one inside the case. On opening night, my theater was serving butterbeer. It was a great experience. Oh, nice.
That's really cool. I want Butterbee in my theater.
Yeah, me too.
Get on it, Regal. Bev Mortal says, I want to see the movie again and maybe again. I love Newt, and my favorite beast was little Pickett the Bow Truckle. He was so cute and funny. I agree.
Oh, you know what? Cute. Actually, like, before we wrap up, I will say, like, my favorite beast, like, aside from the moon calves, was probably the big... What is it, the eagle thing that came at the end with the tears?
Oh, the Thunderbolt. The Thunderbird.
The Thunderbird. Yeah. That was my, might be my favorite, just the way that it was so affectionate towards Newt and stuff like that. I thought it was adorable. It reminded me a little bit of a hippogriff.
Yeah, very true, very true. Well, you guys, that does it for our Fantastic Beasts special. We really hope that you enjoyed our discussion. And, of course, if you want to get in contact with us and continue the discussion with us outside of this particular special, you can reach us in many, many ways, actually. For starters, you can always leave comments in the show notes on hypeable.com. You can also email us at hype@hypeable.com. And if you have rather shorter comments, you can always reach us at Twitter. We are at hypeablehype on there. And we are also at Hypeable Hype on Instagram in case you want to give us a follow on there. Well, with that being said, thanks so much for listening, you guys. My name is Pamela.
My name is Selena.
And we'll see you next time.
And that's no one else.